Kenneth Wayne is a former law enforcement officer who has become a lawyer with a special knowledge of administrative procedure, the ground rules for managing the presentation of legal arguments. Understanding these procedures gives the advantage to the party who holds the most knowledge. Mr. Wayne will present and illustrate the power which comes from knowing the law and using it well.
Some of the things we're going to be covering today is a little bit about my background, a little bit about how I got to where I am today, why I got to where I am today, and what the background information is that I have learned over the years that I'm going to be sharing with you. My first experience, as I recall it, in litigation was about 3 years old, litigating ecclesiastical law with my mother. Now that is a concept. My mother had a belief system that was very, very interesting. We did not always believe that the scripture meant what the words seemed to say that it meant. It always had to be colored with a belief system. Litigating in ecclesiastical law gives you a very, very interesting perspective on law for your life. Our overview today is not going to give you enough information to be able to go out and litigate your cases. This will give you a foundation to help you understand where to look for more information and how to find that information. I am a lawyer, I am not an attorney. There is a difference. An attorney is an officer of the state, and that's where his first obligation and duty lies. You can find out more about that in Corpus Juris Secundum 7, which is a series of books published for lawyers. It's very difficult to read, but there's a lot of information there. You're going to hear words that you don't understand. I'm going to try to explain some of them. Some of what I'm talking is a language I call legalese. It's a special language developed by attorneys to use in the legal system. They use the same words that we use in our everyday language, but they often have very, very different meanings. In the statutes of the various states and the federal government and in international treaties, they will have a definition section, and many times they will have a word defined that means oftentimes even the exact opposite of what we understand it to mean in our everyday language. So if you're going to be looking at statutes, laws, treaties, or anything having to do with law, always remember that you must first review the definitions so that you have an idea of what they're really saying. After litigating ecclesiastical law with my mother, I moved on and joined the United States Air Force, where I had the opportunity to become an air policeman. That resulted in some very interesting situations. I saw some things that I didn't consider to be right, and I wrote some reports about that, and I published them to many different sources, and it wasn't easy for them to just cover it up because I just sent one copy up the chain of command. That resulted in them determining that I was probably better off as a civilian, and I wound up litigating an Article 15 case where what they accused me of was a duty expressly required by Air Force regulations. I pointed that out to the colonel, and he decided that I couldn't have violated regulations when I did exactly what was required. The next day, I was invited to become a civilian. I didn't know that it was negotiable what the terms and conditions of a discharge might be. They offered me a general discharge under honorable conditions after 1 year, 1 month, and 18 days. I didn't realize that that was negotiable, but I told them that I had signed up for 6 years active duty and honorable discharge, and I might want to be a lifer. Well, the sergeant didn't really like that idea too well, and he disappeared into the colonel's office for about 20 minutes and comes back and says, "How about an honorable discharge with full benefits?" Amazingly enough, my response was, "Can you really do that?" And he says, "I just got authorization." And I says, "Based on that, where do I sign?" So I went back to civilian life, where, since the Air Force had taught me to be an air policeman, it was time to move on, and that sounded like a good foundation to build a law enforcement career. I was not yet 21 years of age at the time, so I couldn't carry a handgun. I became a police cadet. Through that program, I had the opportunity to be involved in several administrative hearings internal to the department, and see some of how that worked and how the police department worked, and understand that procedures are very, very important. After that, I moved up to Olympia, Washington area and had the opportunity to apply for the Sheriff's Department. At the Sheriff's Department, they suggested that I also apply to be a reserve so I could get some experience while I was waiting to see if I could get hired. I applied for the reserve program, and they then offered me a part-time position, which was a special deputy position, helping out in the work release program, and it also gave me the opportunity to do many of the things that a reserve deputy would do, going on patrol and helping out in the main jail. At one point, they invited me to be the acting inspector for the department. That was a very interesting development because it led me to being exposed to information that totally changed the course of my life. During the 1977-78 legislative session for Washington, I was to attend some of the backroom meetings with the lobbyists and legislators where they were discussing what types of bills they should propose to the legislature and why they should be passed. This was a very, very eye-opening experience. I remember clearly one particular meeting where they were proposing the model traffic code. At that time, if we wrote you an $8 parking ticket, it was technically a misdemeanor. You could go to jail. You had the benefits of counsel. You could get a public defender if you couldn't afford counsel. You had the opportunity to have a trial by jury. On an $8 parking ticket, we were told this was not very profitable for the state, and it was just not the way things needed to be done. At that time, the lobbyists introduced the model traffic code and suggested that the legislators take that to the legislature and ask that it be passed. During the discussion on that, there was a lawyer in that room who flips through this, and he comes back to the penalty phase. That's how much you're going to pay in a fine if you get caught violating the law. And his question to the lobbyist was, I notice that your penalty schedule starts at $27. How does that square with the Seventh Amendment, and you say we're going to get rid of trial by jury? And here's what the lobbyist told the legislators. It's not up to you to worry about whether it's constitutional or not. That is up to the courts to decide. It is up to you if you think it's in the best interest of the state to pass it as law. And if you pass it as law, it is presumed constitutional unless and until a court of record declares it unconstitutional. And if someone knows the correct procedure to get it declared unconstitutional, that case can be dismissed for other reasons, so a court of record never has an opportunity to rule on the constitutionality of the law you've passed. And if eventually, some way, someday, somebody does get it declared unconstitutional, look at all the revenue you've created in the meantime. 2 years later, that was on the books as if it were law. That really opened my eyes. What that sounded to me like was a conspiracy to commit crimes against the people. Well, there were about 24 people in that room, and I only had 18 bullets, so I decided that maybe there was a better solution than solving it right then and there, and I immediately went back and started asking questions, doing a bunch of my own study. It really shocked me when I realized that 90% of the laws I was out there enforcing by looking at the text of the Constitution and the text of the law were, in my opinion, unconstitutional. That really created a dilemma in my mind of how can I go out and impose this on the people when, in my own understanding of the Constitution, which I took an oath to uphold, I could go out and do this to the very people that I thought that I was there to protect and help. That background led me on a study of years of time in the law library, listening to seminars, and many other different study programs to figure out exactly what this procedure was they told me about, where someone could get these unconstitutional laws declared unconstitutional so they wouldn't be applied to the rest of the people. That led me to a study of many different facets of law over the years. I learned that there's many different ways to run your life, many different ways to run your business, many different ways to deal with your estate situations. And I learned that most of us are very carefully kept from the law in our educational programs. They had a situation recently when I was down at the Supreme Court in Olympia, Washington, where they brought in busloads of school children. And they brought them into that big marble hall, which was the entryway. Directly across was the big oak doors to the Chief Justice chambers. To the left is the Supreme Court hearing room. To the right is the state law library. And they told all these students, right over here is a state law library. Everything you could ever want to know about law is in there. And then they whisked them into the Supreme Court hearing room and talked about how the Supreme Court works. And I thought to myself, they are telling them where the law is, and none of them, based on that curriculum, can ever claim that they did not have the opportunity to know the law. And as we have all heard many times over the years, ignorance of the law is no excuse. They were told where the law was, they ignored the opportunity to learn. Any claim of not knowing the law now is a matter of ignorance. And so when you go to court, the judge is thinking to himself, they know where the law is, they're presumed to know the law, they've had the opportunity to know, and if they do it wrong, they must be intentionally doing it wrong, and therefore I will follow the law even though it's not what they think it is.